Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. This is
Can
our
you let me out,
Monday.
please?
I'm sorry?
Can somebody let me out of here, please?
No. This is our Monday
The
evening Hoops
puppet
HD.
bunker is supposed to be for the championship week.
This again is our Monday evening Hoops HD report. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by John Tytel, Joby Fortson. And
In the
down below
bunker.
me there, a picture of David Griggs as, David, pouring whiskey on your computer is a bad idea, not a good idea.
Why don't they put that on the box?
We'll try to get David's video up during the show. If we can't, he's going to be audio only tonight. That might be a blessing in disguise. Or maybe reverse. If we had audio, picture but no audio, that might be the preferred method.
Well, I do look amazing. I can't deny that, having my picture up there.
Just as a point of reference, we are recording this a little after 9:30 on Monday, February 1st. So we are not going to be discussing the show games that are going on right now, notably the Oklahoma Texas Tech game. That's the only real notable game going on as we record this tonight, other than the fact that it is
Offensive
going on.
explosion so far.
However, before we get to the games that happened and results and upcoming games that are going to get canceled and the like, we have a couple of things I want to discuss. And first of all, on a sad note, we lost one of the greats in college basketball, one of the great coaches, former Bethune-Cookman player as well, John Chaney, this past week. Tytel, I know you posted a couple interviews. Did you have a chance to speak with Chaney himself at one point, and your thoughts having some Philly ties on our losing him?
Sure. I did get to speak with him directly through the help of the Temple SID a long time ago, at least 5 years, maybe more. And I wasn't sure what to expect because I heard all the stories about the 5 a.m. practices and I saw the Calipari video. So he couldn't have been nicer from what I recall. Was willing to answer all my questions and had some great stories. As far as the Philly ties, I certainly got to see him up close and personal when it seemed like he beat Penn by a lot every single year that I was in college. But to be expected. Great coach, great team, and he will be sorely missed. A legend in Philadelphia.
Legend, a defensive coaching wizard as well, Joby. You're a fan of another
Yeah,
defensive coaching
oh,
wizard.
loved watching those teams like with Macon. And I didn't realize until, and this is on me, I didn't realize how many consecutive years and how many year after year Temple made the tournament. I mean, this was not just. I mean, they made it literally every year. It seemed like I think it was 17 of 20 years. You don't think of that. That's an amazing accomplishment. On top of three, and it's a shame he never reached a Final Four because three Elite Eights mixed in. You would have hoped just one of those, especially when they were the number one overall seed, would have led to a Final Four for him. But his legacy, his trailblazing nature, we don't think twice now about black head coaches. He, John Thompson, they're the trailblazers that a lot of people, luckily, our society and our game have people like them, giants to stand on. And I'm glad that they were there for him.
Yeah, and he was a guy who, David, his scheduling philosophy was one I wish so many other coaches would still have today. He basically would say, I play anybody, anytime, anywhere. I don't care. I'll play you.
He and they did. And when you looked at some of those, I mean, it was when we would see some of those Long Beach State schedules. That's what Temple's schedule looked like year after year after year, and they were
except a
not,
better conference schedule.
yeah, and they were not in an under the radar conference. I mean, it was remarkable. The guy was fearless. He feared no one, and he wasn't afraid to lose. I wasn't as close to him as I think some of you were. I never really lived in Philly, but from the outside looking in, this was a guy that was all about getting better over time. And it's not that I shouldn't say that he wasn't afraid to play games and lose them if he felt like overall they would make the team better. I mean, I can't remember the exact year, but I think in one of the Elite Eight years, they were actually 4-7 at one point. Am I remembering that correctly?
No, this was a team that could lose 12, 10, 11, 12 games and still make the NCAA tournament, as Joby mentioned, because that's the type of schedules they'd play. They'd have one of the top strength of schedules of the nation. And
Yeah.
And the team was battle tested for the NCAA tournament. So it really was a shame that they could not, he never did get to the Final Four.
Yeah, but he did just about everything else. I mean, in my opinion, I almost think that that's kind of overvalued. It's a shame Guy Lewis never won at all with all he did for the game. You know, it's kind of a shame Rick Bird never went beyond the round of 64. And yeah, maybe it's a shame that John Chaney never made a Final Four. But I almost wish that, like, that shouldn't be a demerit in any way for everything he did for not just Philly basketball and Temple, but for college basketball as a whole. The guy was incredible. I hated playing against him.
he was absolute legend. But I, you know, we do have a bunch of other stuff we want to get to tonight. I want to next turn to one other issue before we go to games, and that is we are getting closer to conference tournaments. We are now into the month of February. We are, I believe, at February 25th is going to be the very first conference tournament games in the Horizon League, and come March 1st, the smaller conferences get underway, and a week later, the larger ones are going to be getting underway, and we don't know how this is going to work with COVID. If we lose the percentage of games that we are losing right now on a daily basis when we get to conference tournaments, we are not going to get conference tournaments done. That's a plain and simple fact. But there's other issue here, Joby. I know you wanted to discuss this, that there's a chance we may see teams decide to simply opt out of the conference tournament, take a break, get themselves ready for the NCAA tournament if they know they've got an at-large bid wrapped up. And therefore, among other things, you don't risk any problems during the conference tournament. You don't risk injuries as well, and you rest up. And that's something I don't like. I got to mention this here. Roy Williams, I actually heard an interview with him tonight. He said that any team that opts out is, quote, freaking quitters. But Joby, your thoughts on this?
And while I definitely share Roy's sentiment on that, emotionally, you can understand why a team would do this. Now, for our viewers who don't know, you have to have 7 days of clean COVID tests to be able to participate in the NCAA tournament. So in a lot of circles, it's open discussion, I might add. It is get me to Indianapolis for that quasi bubble that they're doing there as fast as possible, away from, you know, away from the ability to be infected, or at least greatly limited. You always have staff here and there in restaurants, you know, where the on the road, but let's get me to as safe a location as possible in this environment, and let me hunker down. You could see a team like Gonzaga is the one that is the obvious. Would you like to go to the West Coast Conference Tournament in Vegas with three other conference tournaments? You already have a one seed wrapped up. You already have players who, they don't care about the WCC tournament. They care about winning it all. They have a real shot winning it all. You have other teams, you know, throughout Drake, who want to win that first round game. That, you know, it's not about, you know, it's not about the great championship week madness for those teams. What happens, and there's plenty of major conference teams, what happens to the top 20, 25 who kind of know they have a bid, know they have a top half bid where they'll be favored in their first game? What happens if all of a sudden they decide for themselves, let me get me to an Indianapolis as fast as possible so I can be ready to go? I don't like it, like Roy. I'm of the opinion, you know what? You don't play in your conference tournament unless it's due to COVID. Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously COVID positive tests. Unless you have those COVID issues, if you don't play, then you don't get to go to the NCAA tournament, and that'll stop it right then and there. But I don't know what power the NCAA at this late stage has on that. It comes back, and started to ramble a little bit, but it comes back to what I've said throughout the entire year that this panel I know agrees with. Why are you playing why is there no gap between the conference season and the NCAA tournament? It's literally insanity for the reasons that Chad gave on the number of COVID cases. Give yourself a break. And this is not the college football playoff where January 1st didn't matter to TV. TV will take it a week later, 2 weeks later, a month later. This is so poorly thought out. That's a side topic, but it's relevant here.
Okay, let me just a couple quick notes. First of all, on Gonzaga being the team, I would note West Coast Conference tournament is done a week earlier. It's done on the first Tuesday. So there would be actually more than a 7-day gap for the Zags. And also four other conference tournaments besides the West Coast in Vegas this year, with the Big West being there. But those are all the following weeks. So they would be out before those other conferences showed up. So I don't know that I'm more concerned about a team
about
like
Pac-12, like a UCLA.
Yeah, I'm talking about a UCLA opting out, a team from the ACC opting out of their conference tournament, that type of thing. But John, what are your thoughts on this? Are you with Joby? Do you think it's okay to opt out?
I can't say it's not, only because you have to say health and safety comes first. I'm sure they all want to win a championship, but at what cost? I think it's very dangerous, slippery slope and enforcement and everything. And it'd be amazing. It's one thing if like a mid-major or like top 50-ish team wants to do it. If Gonzaga or Baylor says, we think that it's in our best long-term interest to give up this short-term chance to win a conference championship, I don't want to be the NCAA person who has to say that they're not going to be in March Madness.
Yeah, well, David, here's another example. Missouri Valley is probably a one-bid league. Could be a two-bid league anyhow, but let's assume that Missouri Valley is looking like it's a one-bid lead and it's Drake, and Drake says, I opt out. But Drake gets in as an at-large bid. Somebody else gets in as the automatic qualifier. We just took away an at-large bid from a power conference team, probably. That creates another issue.
Yeah, potentially. Well, let me start with this. I agree with Roy, and I agree with, I think, pretty much everyone else. I don't know how much of an issue this is really going to be. If it becomes an issue, it'll probably be the last time we ever see it, because they'll rush through legislation immediately in the summer meetings to say that if your conference has a tournament and you are eligible for it, you must play in it in order to play in the NCAA tournament.
That doesn't fix this year.
NCAA championship. But okay, so if that happens, it'll be the last time it ever happens. But as we were saying off air before we came on, I'm not entirely convinced that anybody is going to do this. I don't think the players would want to do it. I'm not so sure. The coaches might want to do it. But if you were to get Drake together and say, you know, fellas, we've decided to not play in the NCAA tournament, or excuse me, to not play in Arch Madness. We're not going to go there. We're not going to sell the tickets. We're not going to get a share of the revenue. Not that the players care about that. But you're not going to get to play, but we are going to let you vote on it. What do you guys think? How would you vote? It would unanimously, without thinking about it, they'd all want to go. I just can't imagine a team, at least with the players on the team, not wanting to play in a conference tournament. It's a big deal. To Joby's point, maybe the West Coast Conference tournament isn't huge. It might be smaller potatoes to Gonzaga than say what the ACC tournament is, or the Pac-12, or some of the bigger ones, but these are showcases for every conference, and the players want to be there. I just don't think you're going to see anybody opt out, but if you do, you won't see it again.
Well, and let me add the one thing to David's point, though. Is he mentions a very valid point that in a normal year, you wouldn't see this, especially in a place like the ACC, where getting a ticket is very tough. Maybe in a place in some of these other tournaments where it's easy to get a ticket. But the fact is, there are no tickets this year. You
know? And that is,
hearing is agreement. You know, I mean, yeah, I guess you could slice a little piece of the TV, but you know, these TV packages kind of come as a full package, you know. So it's kind of tough to do that. So the money, this is the year where it could happen. And I think there's a big danger. My thing is, unlike with how they planned out the schedule for the season, the NCAA should be saying stuff now, as opposed to waiting for it to happen. And then, as David correctly pointed out, rush legislation through the summer. They should be not necessarily rushing legislation, but they should be sending signals now. If you send the signals, probably nobody's going to do it. So
I'll tell you what, we've got a lot to get to with games that happened and the like, but I want to go ahead and pull up the screen share here. Should be coming up in a second. And I'd like to start with one of our favorite things here, with a blind resume test. We like to do these, try to get one of these every week once we get to this point of the season. And I got two resumes up here. Neither one spectacular by any means, but John, let me start with you here. When you look at these two resumes, do either one of them give you a clear indication that one is better than the other, or are we looking at two fairly even resumes? What are we looking at?
I think fairly even is a good description. I'm always terrible at this, so let me just point out a couple of things. One, the team on the left's a bit of a home court hero, 11-1 at home and 2-4 on the road. And as far as meat on the bone, not any tier one wins on the right side and a tier three loss. So if I had to flip a coin between the two, I would lean team on the left.
Lean team on the left. David, would you be with him on the team on the left?
I think so. I'm not, I'm normally pretty good at these, but I haven't been this year. I have no idea who it is. I kind of like the team on the left. They top out a little more. And while their losses are all really good, like, I mean, judging by the net, it looks like it's to everybody that's either inside the bubble or in the conversation. Yeah, I kind of like the team on the left.
Joby, do you have any idea who these teams are? And do you have any thoughts on them?
Joby knows who they are.
I'm pretty confident I know one of them. But the team on the left, I'm that road win.
Yeah, a little fake, yeah.
It's number 60, though. And that's, you know, they are winning the games they're supposed to and losing the games that they're supposed to for the most part. I don't really like either resume. To be very honest, there are better resumes. I have a feeling. I'm dead serious. I know what the bubble resumes look like, and these are two of the teams. I'm pretty sure of one of them. These are two of the teams that I actually argue against.
Okay. Just a quick note here. Two notes here that if you've been watching these shows, you may have seen these. We've never really pointed these out. We have a column here that says average net win and average net loss. And same thing on the other side. And there's the teams, by the way. They just came up.
I knew of the team on the left.
Yeah, those are the averages of your win and the averages of your losses. It's something that's on the official NCAA team sheet. But the team on the left, the Arkansas Razorbacks. The team on the right, the Oregon Ducks. And I thought this was an interesting comparison because, John especially, the Arkansas is not a team that many people have had in the field. Oregon's a team that people have had fairly safely in for a while. Now, you're a little bit surprised that you picked Arkansas over Oregon.
I am. I think this is a good blind one as usual. I think that Arkansas gets a little credit for going on the road. Granted, they can't win on the road, it seems like, except for the Auburn win. The Ducks, I think it's just a matter of a little COVID, frankly. Like, I think that the fact that they've only played 12 games and Arkansas has played 18, in that once Oregon catches up, I think they'll be going in the right direction, but we shall see.
Yeah, one of the problems for the Ducks, their Seton Hall win is looking lesser and lesser every day. The Auburn win looking better for Arkansas every day too, believe it or not.
Their next four games, there is a chance. Sorry, John, it depends on the at Arizona, but there is a chance that they'll get their 13th win with only three losses, and that would look a lot different with the final.
I'll tell you what, we're waiting for David to get back. We lost him for a second, but let's run over to the SEC, and that's where I want to start, because one of the surprising things that happened this week is if you had told me the SEC Big Challenge would go to the SEC this year 5-4, I would have been absolutely shocked at that. The fact that, you know, yes, I understand Texas's game against Kentucky got canceled, and that could have been the 5-5, but you also have to look at the fact that the Big 12 won a huge game in the Oklahoma-Alabama game, and Texas Tech had an unbelievable comeback to beat LSU. So this could have been 7-2 SEC very easily, which is shocking, I think, heading into this. But let's talk about those games.
Right back at you, OT.
I think, David, we have you back here.
I got out of the freaking bumper, you jackasses.
Oh, we actually have a picture, too. So, David, the Oklahoma-Alabama game was a great game, though.
Yeah, it was.
You
know,
your thoughts on what you saw from that from that game?
Well, not just – I mean, first of all, monster win for the Sooners. But secondly, the Sooners have been just on an absolute tear. They've had a season worth – of wins against protected seed caliber teams in about 9 days. You know, I mean, I know we're talking about we're talking about the SEC. So let me talk about Alabama then.
Okay.
I'll save my Oklahoma thoughts for the Big 12. Again, I just got out of the bunker. I'm a little crazy. And I still say that they should put that on the box, not to spill whiskey on your computer. But anyway, I was a little surprised. As good as Alabama had been looking, they're 14-4, but you know, I think two of those losses were really early in a year at a time where they weren't playing nearly as well as they are now. One was to Clemson. I forget who the other one was to off the top of my head, but they were just really steamrolling and they were ranked in the top 10 and deserved it. And I just was not expecting them to lose to Oklahoma. But having said that, I think I was more impressed with the Sooners than I was disappointed in the Tide.
Right. And Florida, one of the most impressive wins, I think, of this event, their 5-point road win at West Virginia, maybe second most impressive after Oklahoma's win. But
I would agree with that. They're now 10-4. They host South Carolina on Wednesday and then a road game at a slumping LSU team on Saturday. They're living by the three, 38% from behind the arc. It's top 30 in the nation. And it's been a really great coaching effort by Coach Mike White. It's one thing to lose Keontae Johnson, which would have destroyed the whole team. But he's only had one player, Trey Mann, start every single game this year. He's been juggling the entire season, not just because of Johnson. And the fact is, one of the juggling acts has been with Colin Castleton. He missed the Tennessee game a couple of weeks ago. He's been unstoppable in the three games since then. 16 points, 2 blocks a game, shooting 19 of 26 from the field. I have them as a 7th seed.
Yeah, Joby, I think we got to address this Missouri team also, because they're getting wins, but they're not coming pretty. They should have lost to TCU. Took a late three to send it to overtime to win the game.
They should have lost to TCU. I'm plain and simple. Missouri, though, you know what? You're going to look. Missouri's a great team to look at when you look at the predictive ratings versus the resume. Because look at those. If you saw that again, it was every one of the resume is like 5, 7, 9. There it is, 5, 7, 9. Predictive, well into the upper 30s in many cases. That shows the difference between maybe, to be honest, who they are, but what they've put together. They're still going to be right now a protected seed, no doubt. They're a 3 seed or better right now if you look at that resume. I mean, Illinois is. We'll get to the Big Ten. I mean, Illinois now is looking a lot better, et cetera. Tennessee got that big win over Kansas. I don't know if that's more about Kansas than Tennessee, but that's a great – Missouri's got a great resume. I mean, out-freaking-standing. But they're skating by. You know, they aren't necessarily blowing the doors off people. And I'm not going to blame them for the Auburn loss, though, because Auburn's a different team with Sharif Cooper. They are. I mean, flat out. And so I'm not going to be brutalizing them for losing to Auburn. It's a tier one loss now with Auburn's rise as well. But yeah, Missouri, interesting. That will be an interesting debate in the committee room, without a doubt.
Well, I would like to agree with Joby on one thing. They should not have beaten TCU, but for a different reason. They should not have been playing TCU.
Yes.
The matchup that we should have had is Kansas and Missouri. That is what they – I mean, I don't know why they didn't pair that together. I mean, there's just
buzz it. Don't buzz that because it's actually true. Yeah,
right. I just buzz it every time he mentions that.
And I have a problem. Know that at the beginning of the year, obviously.
The upcoming schedule there for the week, you see it on there. Quick note, Kentucky-Missouri was moved from Tuesday till Wednesday, but that game is a go. Kentucky apparently coming out of the pause that they've been in. Some, you know, Florida LSU might be a little bit interesting. Alabama, Missouri, a huge one on Saturday. I think that's probably the highlighted game in this conference this week, assuming these games happen. Let's jump over to the other half.
Okay. I had one more observation here, and I just now noticed this. It looks like you have Alabama, Florida. It looks like you have 4 protected seeds, a bubble team, and then a bunch of crap.
Well, again, you say the bubble team is Arkansas or LSU?
LSU.
What's funny is,
but we just looked at Arkansas and we made the case that they're on the bubble. So,
I think Auburn, 2 bubble teams. Then,
okay,
I think Auburn is a bubble level team. They're just not going to play it. The way that, as I mentioned, the way that Cooper has turned that.
I agree with you, Joby. If Auburn was eligible, I think they'd be on the bubble. I don't think they'd be on the good side of the bubble, but I think they'd be on it right now. Yeah, we've got to keep moving, though, because we are way, way behind schedule at this point. So let's try to go a little bit quicker here. The Big 12, we already mentioned all these games, but I want to very quickly hit a couple of teams that we did not discuss yet. First of all, Titel, Oklahoma State got the win over the Arkansas State team that we started this show off on, and they're looking really pretty good right now.
Very good week. Destroyed Iowa State on the road, although who hasn't? And then they beat the aforementioned Arkansas team at home to improve to 11-4. They should win at TCU on Wednesday. Then they host Texas in a huge game on Saturday. Everybody knows about Cade Cunningham. He was gone for two games with COVID protocol. He's back now. His fellow freshman, Matthew Alexander Moncrief, has been great the past three games. 15 points, 9 boards, 2 steals a game. I have them as a 7 seed, just like Florida.
Kansas, Joby. This team is playing like utter crap right now. Tennessee was playing bad, and they got blown out by a Tennessee team that's not been playing good. Maybe they
come off a beautiful 4-point win over Mississippi State. Way to go! Yeah,
well, Kansas barely got bit by TCU earlier in the week. Maybe they get what they need with K-State coming up tomorrow night.
The streak's over. Let's just get that out of the way. The streak's over. I don't care what Baylor's not losing 4 games. it's over. Kansas, Kansas is Kansas, and they're still going to be a solid team and can probably compete for a protected seed. I am not willing to put dirt on them, but boy, have they got to turn things around. Something's just not clicking right now. We'll see if this turns into a death spiral for them, which could cost them the tournament overall if they did that, because the Big 12 is not a place where you put out weak effort after weak effort because you will be punished for it. But I'm not going to – people swing one way or another, and I'm not willing, just as David rightly said, it was more about Oklahoma than Alabama. I'm not willing to throw Alabama under the bus. I'm not willing to – bury Kansas just to say, hey, they are where they are in the standings and probably below Oklahoma State, even on the seed line, that you could argue, but they're still at this point wearing white.
Yeah. David, you mentioned Oklahoma. I want to get back to that for a quick second here. Quick note, they jumped from 24th in the AP poll to 9th this week. That tied the largest jump in the AP poll in the last 30 years from one week to the next. A 15 spot jump was absolutely amazing. And when you look at factor it in now, so you have 7 teams here in the Big 12 that are all clearly tournament teams at the moment, assuming Kansas breaks.
Are you sure that's right? Like, because didn't 15's... Michigan? Oh, okay, maybe, because didn't Michigan go from unranked to 4th last year? From one week to the next?
I think that was early in the season. That may not have counted.
Okay.
Pull an upset early in the season, an unranked team any given year, and then all of a sudden, oh, you beat Duke. You're now number
one. Yeah, but at this point in the season, at least a 15 spot jump is the biggest jump we've ever seen, or tied the biggest jump we've ever seen. And we're now looking at a conference where we have 7 teams that are all in play for protected seeds, which is unbelievable.
It really is. I never ever thought you would see anything like that, but there it is.
All right, let's keep moving here. Roll over to the Big Ten Conference, and John, let me go back to you here, because we may have seen one of the best games of the entire season Friday night in that Illinois Iowa game. Follow up to what they did last year when they played each other. Quite honestly.
So I remember Thursday, I'm trying to tell you Illinois is a good team, and everybody's like, they're like a 7 seed or whatever. And all they do is go out and beat Iowa to improve to 11-5. Battle of All-Americans. I love Luka Garza. Ayo Dosunmu outscored him 25-19 head-to-head. Very tough week ahead. They travel to Indiana Tuesday. They host the Badgers on Saturday. They've been great from behind the arc. 40%, number 7 in the nation. I have them as a 3 seed, even though you all hate them.
I am there now. I mean, I think the Iowa win, in my opinion, was what was missing on the profile. I know David, because it was a home win, doesn't even count it still, but I'm not going to ask his opinion on that then. but I want to pick up another team, Joby, on the other end of the Big Ten here.
I'm not with you on this one.
I know they are 6-7 right now, but one of the biggest wins of the week was Penn State's home win of Wisconsin. And tomorrow night, they play him again at Wisconsin. If they win this game, that's a stretch, but they just did it the other night. Are we suddenly talking about an 11-team Big Ten, including the Nittany Lions?
Does Penn State have the opportunity? Without a doubt, they have the opportunity. As a matter of fact, I might argue they would be in my field with a at Wisconsin loss, but then win at home against Maryland, beat a struggling Michigan State team, and take care of Nebraska. At that point, very realistic outcome, 3-1. They go 3-1 in their next four games. They are a tournament team, but they can't have a losing record. Sorry, it is a disqualifier. Even in COVID, even with, I know you're going to say, oh, well, what if they had a bunch of bye games? I don't care. 6-7 is an affront to, for lack of a better word, the Winthrops of the world.
That's my argument, though. John, you are our selection committee guest expert. If you take the same exact profile and add in five more tier four wins that are all wins against garbage, don't you have an NCAA tournament profile right now at that point?
You have a very strong argument, I think. And I'm hoping to ask selection committee member Mitch Barnhart that in a couple of weeks. No, I think you're both right. Joby, I agree. Like, losing record is kind of a like non-starter for me too. But I see Chad's point that this is a weird year where instead of scheduling like Slippery Rock University or something for an in-state game, they've been playing nothing but like great teams. Like, look at it. Like, they only have one tier four game. Forget a win, one tier four game.
What tier three game is Northwestern? You know,
I would argue, yeah, and they beat Northwestern by three. I would argue that if they played Slippery Rock five times, they'd lose one of those.
That'll be a different story. That'll make it easy. David, the other team, I got to give a shout out to my team here. Had a real good
they
week.
Did.
Rutgers 67-37 over Michigan was just, I still can't figure out that score. It's one of the most amazing things I've ever seen.
Michigan State,
yes.
Yeah. But no, I still like Rutgers. I've been kind of disappointed in them this year because I really thought they were a protected seed caliber team. They still may be, but they did have kind of a lull. But no, they are good. I still think they have a very high ceiling. I don't expect them to just get into March. I think they can go several rounds into the tournament. And let's see, another team I'd kind of like to discuss here, Chad, is just when you look at what the Cornhuskers have done since getting rid of Tim Miles, and you look at what the rest of the league has done, and you just see how he elevated this conference to what it is.
The buzzer doesn't seem to be quite working right there because I'm trying to get that back. But
Ian Izzo, because I just want to point out to all our viewers, I know Michigan State has state on their uniforms, but right now they should not be anywhere close to the tournament. I dare say Penn State has a stronger argument with that losing record.
What is Lansing? Like 200 miles from Indianapolis? I mean, they're relatively. Just a couple-hour drive.
I got the upcoming schedule, and if you want to figure out what game to circle, you can just circle all of them. Other than Michigan-Northwestern, that game is off. But the rest of them should all be good games. I guess we could cross off Nebraska-Michigan State. That game is probably meaningless as well. But
who's Iowa got?
I was going to be hosting Michigan State. Then they're hosting Ohio State on Thursday. Then they're at Indiana on Sunday. So, I mean, Iowa.
Yeah, so they've got a chance to pick up on Thursday night and perhaps Sunday their first protected seed caliber win, something they don't have yet.
We'll talk about Iowa more during our bracket rundown show coming up later this week.
Yeah, we're going to put them too high.
We're going to go over to the Big East right now. And with the Big East schedule coming up there. And Tytel, while I don't think they are even as close as Penn State at the moment, is it time to start keeping a little bit of an eye on a team that just picked up two road wins this week in the Johnnies?
There are three teams in the Big East with 11 wins overall. Villanova, Xavier, and wait for it, St. John's, you say? It's ridiculous. They started the month 1-3 in January. They won each of their last four games of the month. Coach Mike Anderson has had a winning season every single year since he started coaching in college in 2003. Even if he gets swept by Villanova in February and loses in the first round of the Big East tourney, he just needs to win three of his final eight to finish 14-13 overall. Julian Champagny, not even the best player in his own family this year, thanks to Justin, who's doing great, but a hell of a shooter, 43% from behind the arc, 84% at the line. They are outside the bubble, but they are going in the right direction.
Yeah, they got their chances. Villanova, Seton Hall coming up.
Oh, if they win out, they'll be in good shape.
They beat DePaul, and what this showed is the Marquette needs to be taken out back.
We're not talking about Marquette.
Marquette's going to beat Villanova twice.
They probably will.
We also shouldn't be talking about Providence anymore with a with what they did. They completely fell apart against Georgetown in that
guilty
game.
Guilty is charged on that one. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, there's the wheels falling off, and then there's the car just totally blowing up. That's what's happened to Providence. The
We were talking about Marquette because of the great height of its profile. Wisconsin, you know, they have two just awesome wins at the top of their profile. And we said, well, and my reasoning was you got to watch out because all they have to do is take care of business against St. John's, win against Providence at home. No, they can't do. And so Marquette, they are, you know, I use the term glass tiger, a two-hit wonder. There's your two hits. And now we will not be paying attention. Don't forget about me when I'm gone.
I'll tell you, the team though, David, that I think we need to pay attention to this week, especially with a pair of road games at Providence, at UConn, is Seton Hall, because this is a team that is very, very, very quickly heading in the very wrong direction, three straight losses, and they're now only one game over 500.
And that is totally fair. Seton Hall has looked great in some close losses, nearly winning at Villanova, while albeit Nova was a little rusty that game, played them tough a second time, played Creighton tough, lost at Louisville by one at a time when we probably thought Louisville was a little better. And I just can't get the idea out of my head that this is a good Seton Hall team. And the paper doesn't show it. And I know you kind of blasted me incorrectly, by the way, for putting them on my 11 line today. But I just can't help but think that this is a tournament caliber team.
I think they passed the eye test. Yeah, they don't pass the resume test for me, right?
They don't. And yeah, they need to win. If they get the next two games, which are both road games, I think that that's going to start to change the complexion of their profile. But no, they have mastered the art of near misses.
Well, and remember, we're taught of the three losses, that three game losing streak. Those are three games that half the field would go 0-3 against Villanova twice and Creighton. So let's calm down.
They almost won two of them. I mean,
and most of the field wouldn't get as close to Villanova as they did in that.
Yeah.
Let's jump over to the ACC now. And John, let me bring you back in to talk about, we discussed Roy Williams at the top of the show here, and his Tar Heels are a team that's actually heading in the opposite direction of Seton Hall, I think, at the moment.
I couldn't agree more. They finished December with back-to-back losses to open conference play. I was worried they were going to be just calling it a season and throwing in the towel. They won 6 of 7 in January, the only loss by 7 on the road at Florida State. Big road trip this week at Clemson Tuesday. Then they head to they're in Chapel Hill, I think, on Saturday for the least exciting rivalry game I can ever remember between the two Blue Bloods. The offense is still a work in progress. They're outside the top 200 in shooting from 1 point and 2 point and 3 point land. Bit of a home court hero as well. They only played 6 home games. They won all of them. The freshman trio, Caleb Love, De'Ron Sharp, RJ Davis, each of them off to a slow start in the months past. Now they're all scoring about 10 a game. I have them as a 10 seed.
Yeah. The Tar Heels, I think they said this is the first time North Carolina and Duke have both been unranked heading into the game since 1960 or something ridiculous.
That's unbelievable. I never realized that.
And North Carolina's only you have it on the other page, but it's only a few spots out of the rankings, so they almost
– Right. Joby, do we want to talk about the best team in the state of Virginia on the right there, or do I get in trouble for saying that?
I didn't know we were talking about VCU tonight.
there was one well put. If you've watched Virginia games for a while since their national prominence, there are a lot of games where Virginia and the Purdue for Nash people on the Purdue game against Carson Edwards is a great example of it, where Virginia sometimes will just wind up against these amazing shooters against great defense that just given the game of their life. And Virginia, even with that, takes the punch, brings it down. And at the end of the game, they win by 15 to 20 points because the things go back to the norm. When Kihei Clark, who I love dearly, but goes 3 for 3 in the first half, and you hold Virginia Tech scoreless for close to 8 minutes at one point, but you're only up 5, things are going to start coming back to the mean, and that is what happened in reverse. And that Virginia Tech is legit. even with the loss, even with the loss of Radford, this team is well coached, a solid team, and knocking on the door of a protected seed. Because all of a sudden you have two of the better wins out there, two top 10 net wins. You got to shrug your shoulders and go, wow. And Oria, now he might have had the game of his life. You know, he's averaging 14 points, had something like 26 in that game. But let's see if with the new dynamic of the team, if all of a sudden from him, from the four spot, starts to get a lot of points. All hats off to the Hokies. Well-earned win. And we'll see how things play out down the stretch.
And yeah. Did David, one other team, a couple of teams I want to briefly
wanted to say real quick. And it will be real quick. Under the radar, I know that, Jovi and Tytel didn't follow it, but for years I said I thought Mike Young was a really good coach. I still believe that.
Yeah. But David, a couple teams that before today, I was going to come on here and say that, hey, they had a pretty good week. Duke had with a pair of wins, including beating Clemson. Georgia Tech goes out and beats Florida State by 11.
Yeah.
And then today, before we come on, Georgia Tech gets blasted by Louisville.
Blasted, yeah.
Duke loses to an undermanned Miami team that hasn't been able to beat anybody this year. Should we throw away anything we were going to say good about both teams and just move on?
Yes.
Okay. And on that case, though, then let's take a quick look at the upcoming schedule.
We can say a few bad things if you want.
The most interesting game, Chad, of your upcoming schedule is tomorrow night, without a doubt. And it's because Boston College
has four scholarship players. Yep.
Four healthy people. How do you play a game? And yeah. I'm shocked they're going forward with the game, to be very honest.
Jim Kreskin is less than thrilled with this development.
And you get Florida State. Yeah, I know Florida State just lost the game, but Florida State still kick ass. And I just,
in terms of rankings and stuff, the Louisville Virginia game on Saturday is the most interesting one, I think, on there for in reality. Yeah. Besides the interest of watching how Boston College plays with four walk-ons and four scholarship players as their entire roster tomorrow night.
Yeah,
but jump over to the Pac-12 here.
Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I just wanted to throw out another nugget there. We got the Duke North Carolina game on Saturday. Did you know that the two schools are just 8 miles apart?
That buzzer isn't working. Let's jump over to the
Pac. They have never.
Dave, I got the Pac-12 up though. Let me ask you though about probably the most surprising result was what Colorado did at home against Utah, where they were up by about 300 points with about 9 minutes left in the game. And found a way to lose. And that's real concerning for me for this Buffs team.
Well, yeah. And the thing is, it's the second time that they've done something that has really made you scratch your head. Now, losing to Utah in and of itself, while not good, and maybe it's even a little bit of a setback, it's certainly not a back-breaking loss. But you combine that with the loss at Washington, and you start to wonder, like, if there's issues with this Colorado team, if you look at their profile, they're still, even with both of those, a solid NCAA tournament team. But man, are they starting to have some warts pop up on that resume that, I mean, it's almost preposterous that they would have lost both those games the way that, well, at least losing to Utah the way that they did and losing to Washington at all.
It is. I mean, they've got the Arizona schools at home coming up this week, allegedly. So that could be, they need to get these good wins here. One of their good wins was at USC. Tytel, I've got USC up there on the right-hand side. Team, I think you had some thoughts on.
Yeah, I mean, for all the Pac-12 love that we've been sending to UCLA, I think that the Trojans are in a good spot. They had the 2-point loss at Oregon State, bounced back with a revenge win and beat Cal. Now 13-3, they play at Stanford on Tuesday. They host the Bruins in the LA inner city rivalry game on Saturday. Great interior defense, only allowing 41% inside the arc. And as good as the Champagne brothers are, and they are the best, the Mobley brothers are giving them some competition. Combined 26 points, 16 boards, 4 blocks a game between Evan and Isaiah. I have them as a 6 seed right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like this USC team a lot. Maybe not 60, maybe 7, but I think that's in that ballpark. Joby, we also saw Stanford win at Arizona, but they couldn't pick up the sweep. I still think going 1-1 of that Arizona trip is not awful. I think
Stanford's a pretty solid team. They They got the win last week on the last in the final seconds that really put it to them. They show they're finally able to walk back into the Bay Area, you know, which is kind of nice for them to be at home. Stanford is the team to watch out for. I think that I don't see how they missed the tournament, to be very honest, because they put together a very solid resume, but I don't see them climbing high up the seed list. I think where you see them is where you got them, which is that 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 range. You know, I think that's their height, that's their ceiling and their floor at the same time.
Okay. Oregon, who we start off the show by mentioning, also on yet another COVID pause. I think they're third of the season at this point, or so, yeah, at least their second. It's a shame because they do need to get some wins under their belt. UCLA game that was supposed to have for tonight is off, but let's keep running here through things here because we are way behind schedule. Quickly over in the American, where Houston is the best team, and at this point, David, I don't want to discuss anybody else. Do you?
Well, I mean, it is worth speculating. If you were to have an all-star team put together from the other 10 teams, would they be able to beat Houston? I don't think so.
We thought maybe we liked SMU a little bit. They lose 2 out of 3. Granted, one of them was to Houston, but Joby, the way they lost to Houston, I think factors in there.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, they're not a tournament team. I mean, come on. They're not. They are an NIT level team, but they're not a tournament team. As a matter of fact, I think what we have found out, and that the Tulsa game might turn out to be the biggest upset of the year. Yeah, you know, because
it might.
Houston, not just in America, but nationally, because Tulsa stinks. It's a shock that Houston has one loss in this very down UConn-less, you know, piece of junk they call the American Athletic.
Yeah, and Houston is. Does play East Carolina Wednesday night. They don't have any other games this week. There was talk of potentially trying to get a non-conference game against Gonzaga, where we'll go next. What I'm hearing now is that deal has fallen through. And real quickly, the West Coast Conference, we're talking Gonzaga, we're talking BYU, and John, we're not talking to anybody else, are we?
Moving along, no veto.
No veto, exactly.
When you look at Gonzaga, I like their chances. I think they can hold on and win this conference.
They look pretty darn good. Now, they do have one more game with BYU coming up, but it's not coming up this week. BYU is at San Diego, at Portland, while the Zags are hosting Loyola Marymount and Santa Clara.
Yeah.
Not much more to discuss, though. Let's jump over to the Mountain West Conference, which does have some stuff to discuss. And, John, let me start with you in this league, where Boise State had been looking like they were rolling, and then they ran into the Colorado State, we want to split with everybody, problem last week, I guess.
I agree. This is a team they entered last week on a 13-game winning streak, one of the best in the country. Then they lost at Colorado State on Wednesday, beat the Rams in the rematch on Friday, another 14-2. Four winnable games ahead, doubleheaders against Nevada and UNLV. Then four losable games after that with doubleheaders against Utah State and the Aztecs. Junior guard Marcus Shaver missed 3 games in December. He's bounced back in a big way at a season-high 21 points in their win last week. He's made 13 free throws in a row. I have them as a 9 seed.
Yeah, and Joby, San Diego State picked up a pair of – did what they had to at home against Wyoming.
Yeah, no one gets higher than Wyoming. San Diego State has – is starting to play. I think Air Force was a good elixir for them. Just dominate them. And they continued that dominance going forward. I think San Diego State is where we thought they were, which was not a top 25 team. They were not a top 25 team preseason, but most everyone had them in the field in the middle of the seed list.
I had them in the top 25.
That's pretty solid. That's about where they are going to wind up.
I had them in the top 25.
David, the upcoming schedule, the big games to circle involve Wyoming again as one of the best rivalries in all of the Mountain West and maybe all of college basketball between Colorado State and Wyoming in front range action.
Yeah, we have front range action. And I mean, it's a conference game it's a double conference game.
Yes, it's a conference game in the front range as well here.
Yeah. And I'm worried the front range might lose their auto bid if Colorado keeps losing games to teams like Utah and Washington.
Let's jump over last, well, second to last conference, actually, because we'll get to that in a second here. But over in the Atlantic 10, which is loading here, we're having a little bit of a problem there with it, with the schedule. There it is.
It's been our day for technical difficulty.
Over in the A-10, John, Dayton was the team that had the best week. I don't think they're a tournament team yet, but are they? Is it moving the right direction with that St. Louis win?
Yes, and amazingly, this is a team that's down two starters. Chase Johnson and Rodney Chapman have both missed most of the season so far. Somehow, they bounced back from a horrible 23-point loss at VCU by winning at St. Louis and beat Rhode Island at home to improve to 10-4. They had to Duquesne Tuesday and then the big game against Richmond on Friday. Hard to believe their first three losses were by a combined 5 points. Why? Their opponent's free throw percentage, 61%, is the worst in the country. And can we please get an oxygen tank for senior guard Jalen Crutcher, averaging 39 minutes a game this year? They're outside the bubble, but they're only a couple big wins away from getting right back in it.
David, I got to ask you about the team that they beat, St. Louis. You put them in your field today, and I noticed there's one thing that you will never put a team in your field if they're missing. That's missing from their profile.
Yeah.
Where are the road wins?
They're not there. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, it's.
I guess the problem is where the road games profile. Also. But
honestly, it was a pretty bad selection. I had another team that I discussed with you, or another possible selection, but opted.
It would have been better. Yeah,
yeah. We might be keeping that one on the shelf, a nice little Easter egg. But I'm not. I think part of it was that I think their struggles are more due to circumstance than they are to how good the team actually is. They did beat a fairly decent LSU team, but to be fair, and this is the only way you can do it, which is not what I did today. You can only evaluate what's there. You know, if that were the case, then under the radar teams would probably get selected more often. If, you know, circumstantially they were able to play stronger schedules and have more opportunities built into their season the way multi-bid league teams do. St. Louis has nothing there.
They had an opportunity. The medical examiners for Richmond cleared them. They have to have some explaining to do.
Well, Joby,
they really do.
Joby, I got interviewed here a little bit because Richmond then went on pause today. So
yeah,
it kind of justifies St. Louis making the right decision canceling that game.
But yeah, if you have limited possibilities, you know, well, yeah.
Hopefully they're
and maybe that's Richmond got some splaining to do more than St. Louis.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You know,
and there's Winthrop, there's Loyola, there's Drake, there's teams in the area. I hope that, well, not that Winthrop's in the area, but I hope SLU can get some more games.
Well, on the schedule for Saturday, if it happens, is the Bonnies at SLU. This is a must-win game for SLU at this point.
It is.
Too.
Yeah, it is.
And the Bonnies could really use it also, though.
Yeah.
But that could be the game of the season in the A-10 if it does happen. So we'll hope.
Look at those Bonnie, you know, KPI and JNG and SOR numbers. I mean, you know, they're not going to get, you know, that high a protected seed, but it just goes to show that they have some buffer and, you know, the Bonnies, we've got to really talk at large for them very seriously.
We normally would be pulling down the screen here and going to final thoughts, but because of something that happened today, we have one more team to discuss on this show. Congratulations to the Drake Bulldogs breaking into both polls at number 25, 17-0 overall, 8-0 in conference, huge sweep, double sweep at Missouri State, snuck out a win over Illinois State on Sunday, and then completely, was it Sunday or was it Saturday? It was Sunday.
Yeah,
completely pounded Illinois State in the by 35 points tonight. But Joby, I know you've been a big proponent of this Drake JT.
You know, you continue to keep that zero up there. And I think a split, because notice in the far right column, that AP coaches poll column, Loyola Chicago, by the time those two teams meet, if just by mere inertia, might be a ranked versus ranked game. And Loyola Chicago's good.
I actually like Loyola a little bit more.
Yeah, and you can see a split with Drake and Loyola Chicago, one loss Drake that then turns into two loss in the conference tournaments, as long as it's not against the very bottom. If it's like an Indiana State type loss, I think Drake's still a large candidate. If they run the table or just have a Loyola Chicago loss. I think a, you know, winding up, you know, with an MVC championship, 20 plus wins with one loss. I think we're talking Buffalo Wofford in their seat.
Yeah. I got to mention here, Drake got a 7 and a 5 point win at Missouri State. Loyola Chicago won 72-46 yesterday at Missouri State. Tonight, it's not on the screen, 70-50 at Missouri State. If you look at how well you played against the third best team in the Valley, I'm with you, David. Loyola might be a better team, even though Drake has the better resume without a loss.
Right. And this has been this team kind of came out of nowhere. Like when DeVries took over, I think this is his third year. They were awful. They won 20 games last year and it was a little bit of a surprise. They had, and they dealt with like a key injury, I think. And then here they are this year, ranked in the top 25. What a job he has done there. The long time, I want to say Creighton assistant, getting it done at Drake. Yeah. And again, Loyola Chicago, we've seen what Porter Moser can do. A lot of really good coaching in this league. Evansville had a very, well we all know
we'll,
how
we'll talk about that way.
Greatest exit ever last
okay.
year.
Okay. But Drake, a pair of games at Valpo this week. But on that note, I am going to pull the screen down at this point and turn to any final thoughts. And John, let me start with you on that.
So, since Joby stole my Boston College final thought, which was okay because it's a fantastic thought, I'm going to go with health stuff because I remember in the preseason media conferences way back in like November, there were coaches talking about they think that it's not going to be about the best team but about the healthiest team. And I feel bad for a team like NC State. This is a team that finished December 6-1 with a win over the Tar Heels on under their belt. Then they started January. They went to Clemson and lost in overtime after leading for most of the second half. Sounds like a tournament resume, right? Not so fast. They've lost 5 of their past 6, and their health is going down the toilet. Devin Daniels gone for the year with a torn left ACL. DJ Funderburk had missed 3 games earlier due to quarantine, now out due to university policy. It's really a shame because they have the talent as do many other teams in the country. If you're not healthy and if your players are not eligible, you're not doing anything this month and you're not going anywhere next month.
That is a shame, but I think that's a season we have, unfortunately. Joby.
Yeah, I have a David Griggs final thought. Gonzaga is good.
All right.
Well, since he gave David
your thought. You stole my final thought.
David said for that note, we're done with the show.
Guns, yeah. Now I've stole David.
David, you got anything else you want to throw at us to end the show?
Yes, and I'll try and keep this short because I know that we're running up against it. But I can't – the closer and closer we get to conference tournaments and to the NCAA tournament, the less and less I like how it's being managed. Now, to be fair to the NCAA, I know that it's their first pandemic, and maybe it's all of our first pandemic, so there isn't a how-to manual on how to do it. I am not a fan of teams getting there for 7 days and basically staying there – for 9 after being gone the previous week to play in a conference tournament. I just don't think it's conducive to the academic side. I think it's going to create potentially a lot of problems on campus. And I know that that's sort of out of sight, out of mind for a lot of the fans, but for the players, it really isn't. I just wish that something would have come up. I don't like the idea of waiting until May either on the grounds that it's 2 months between essentially when the season ends and when the tournament is played. But I think that there's fewer cons in doing that than the way they're going to try and do it now. Just my 2 cents.
And the big thing is if we waited to May though, we could have vaccine shots in all these kids' arms.
Right.
And we would not be sitting here saying, are we going to lose games to COVID?
Right.
Honestly, if you have a vaccine in everybody's arm and somebody does test positive,
it's not.
I'm not certain that you need to shut the program down. I think everyone else could, in theory, be fine to play.
You're absolutely right.
Yet, but yeah.
Yeah. And again, I can attest. I never went to class in college, and they threw me out. So I mean, it's not good to be away from class that long.
On that note, though, I do want to thank everybody for joining us. On behalf of John Tytel to my side, Joby Forts and below him, David Griggs, who unfortunately got his video back, and unfortunately we did not lose his audio as well. I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again real soon.